Chapter 13, The Journey. For the second time since the kid came to be in his care, Din's priorities had undergone a dramatic shift. At first, his only goal had been to keep him safe from the onslaught of bounty hunters and imps that sought him. Now, he was the one doing the seeking. It was a return to normalcy in some ways. Din was used to looking for people. However, usually the people he was looking for were neither experts at concealing themselves nor enemy sorcerers. He embarked on the journey gladly, for the kid. Din had never seen himself as a parent. He'd enjoyed the bubbly company of the foundlings that had lived at the covert, but he never imagined actually having one as his own responsibility. It was profoundly stressful. Din killed for a living. He was not even remotely qualified to keep a helpless, well, mostly helpless, baby alive. There were the people actively trying to steal the child, of course, but there were also the day-to-day hazards as well, like stopping the kid from putting live wires in his big green ears or eating poisonous fauna. And despite the fact that the kid seemed to eat everything, Din didn't know anything about the nutritional needs of his species. If he wasn't getting something he needed, or if he got sick, would Din even be able to tell? How could he fix it? Hopefully the child's people would know the answers to all these questions. But Din didn't like that prospect either. Finding the sorcerers meant surrendering the kid. The little creature his life had come to pivot around in the last months would be gone, and Din would never see him again. The thought made his chest tighten. Because, despite all the insanity, the kid had his whole heart in his tiny, three-fingered hands. Every coo and smile and wiggle of his ears made Din happier than he'd ever thought possible. They left Tatooine late at night, after the crate dragon was dead and Din had acquired the tarnished Beskar Gom, a new lead on where to find his people. And, much to his chagrin, a passenger. The frog lady was asleep almost before they broke the atmosphere, slumped in the co-pilot's chair. The kid was not asleep. He was perched in Din's lap, cooing to himself as he so often did. Din would pay many credits to know what he was saying. It was probably fascinating. Din was just about to set the autopilot and try to doze himself when the ship's comms beeped lightly at him, indicating a new message. He looked at the readout and did a double take. The recorded transmission had been sent from one of the armorer's old frequencies, one that shouldn't be accessible since the covert was no more. Apprehensive, Din accepted the transmission. The child gave a soft "wah" of interest as the holo came through. It was Cal. The holo only showed him from the waist up. His brow was furrowed and his hair was askew. He seemed to be fiddling with the transmitter on his side. "I'm not sure if this is force. These instructions are vague. I'm not even sure you could slice this transmission, BD." There was a chirp somewhere on Cal's end, and he started, pushing his hair back hastily. One piece stayed stuck out with determination, and Din's fingers twitched, as though he would be able to put it back in place through the recording. "Oh, it's working now? Wait, hello? I hope this message finds you well, although I'd settle for it finding you at all at this point, ha! I hope it's okay for me to contact you this way. Wait. Actually, I should apologize first. I wasn't straightforward with you about what I was. I honestly assumed that you knew. But then I realized, well, it doesn't matter. Now you know. I heard about the occupation on Navarro, and I was worried that something had happened to you and your tribe. I guess I was right. Your leader said that you'd be needing help. I guess I just wanted to make sure you know that I'm here if you want me. Or, need me. Anything from me. I mean, yeah. The same goes for the rest of the Mantis. They were worried about you too, although Grease would never admit it. Anyway, if you can, let me know that you're okay. You don't have to, obviously. I'm sure you're busy, but, yeah. See you soon, I hope. Now, how do I... Ah, I see. Poncho out. Din sat in silence for a minute, processing the many things he was feeling. Apart from the concern in Cal's tone, no one ever worried about him. One thing in particular stuck out to him. The apology. What was Cal sorry about? And what was it that Din was supposed to know now? He mentally inventoried the small amount of information he had on the man, particularly anything that would have come up with the armorer. The only thing he could figure was that it had something to do with Cal's ambiguous work with the rebellion. But frankly, Din didn't know enough about rebel politics to know what that could possibly have to do with him. As for the offer of assistance, he didn't know what to think. On one hand, the idea filled him with a strange, warm feeling. He wanted to accept, though not for the reasons he should. But did he really want to drag Cal into this mess? How could Din even begin to explain everything that had happened to him in the past few months? In his lap, the kid was staring fixedly at the place where Cal's face had been, mouth slightly open. Din reached out and held the rewind button on the transmission and watched it again. The crew of the Mantis spent much of their time gathering what information they could on the Imperial factions operating in the Outer Rim. What they found was worrying, to say the least, and they'd only managed to get in touch with the Corps a couple of times to relay their intel. The New Republic's forces were stretched thin, as usual. It was unfortunate, but there just wasn't that much that could be done. They could contact Master Skywalker, at least, who had relocated to Deveron to refurbish the Temple of Edit with help of a few Jedi and some new students. Cal was glad they'd chosen that place for the training temple. He'd had a good feeling about the place when he'd visited, despite its decrepit state. He wished he could be there, protecting them and helping with the repairs and scrambling around the old ruins. But this was more urgent. The temple would still be there when the threat in the Outer Rim was gone. Hopefully. When not preoccupied by the ghosts of the Empire or the Order, Cal wondered about the Mandalorian. He hovered around the communications module so often that someone, probably Seer, had left a blanket on the floor next to it so that he didn't have to sit on the cold floor. He prayed to the Force that his message had gotten through. But if it hadn't, there wasn't much he could do about it. Maybe the Mandalorian had gotten the transmission and didn't want to respond. Days passed in a haze of tension and vague concern. Finally, it happened. In the middle of the ship's night cycle, Cal, sleepless, had been meditating when he was called back to himself by the sound of a transmission coming through. The image of the Mandalorian that came through was not what Cal expected. His helmet was the same, but the rest of the armor that Cal could see had been swapped out with pure, unpainted Beskar. It shone brightly even through the holo. On his right pauldron, the likeness of some creature, a mudhorn, had been engraved. A signet. "Thank you for your message," the holo of the Mandalorian was saying. "I'm quite surprised you got the armorer to give you this frequency. You must have made an impression on her. She doesn't take such things lightly." "We're fine. A lot has happened since we spoke last. I'll have to fill you in sometime. I'm about to leave Navarro, which is, as of today, Imperial free. The covert will not return here, but the survivors will move on through the network and live. This is the way." There was an odd, garbled squeak and a thump in the background, and the Mandalorian whipped around suddenly. There was a jetpack on his back. That was also new. What the hell had happened to him? Who did he mean by we? The Mandalorian sighed. "I'm sorry, I have to go. Be well. Koyaki." The transmission ended quickly. A day later, Cal learned that the last Imperial base on Navarro was gone. Not abandoned. Gone. Completely destroyed. Cal couldn't help but be impressed, though it wasn't without a small sting of regret. He could have helped. He'd offered to help. While the Mandalorian hadn't exactly said no, he hadn't accepted either. And he wished he knew why. After some deliberation, Din returned planetside to ask a favor of Marshal Cara Dune before he left Navarro. "What name did you want me to look up again?" she asked, clicking around her New Republic console. As a marshal, she had access to the most complete database of Republic citizens in existence, but Din's own absence from the directory was evidence that it wasn't complete. The only people listed with any reliability were criminals, government officials, or military. "Cal Kestis." "Cal Kestis," Kara repeated, plugging in the letters. "Who's that?"
A friend."
There must have been something telling in his voice, because Kara looked up from the monitor, disbelief etched on her face. "Tell me you didn't just ask me to use my credentials to do a background check on some hookup."
"That's not what I..."
The console beeped, indicating that it'd found a match, and Kara turned to squint at the readout. "That's weird," she said.
"What's it say?"
"Well, I got a match, but it says here that Cal Kestis served in the Grand Army of the Republic during the Clone Wars and died in action aboard a Star Destroyer."
Din sighed, a little disappointed. "Must be someone with the same name."
"Wait, it gets weirder. If this information is right, he made the rank of commander at age 12 and died shortly after." Din did some mental math. If that child had lived, he'd be about Din's age. Was it possible that this was Cal's file and it simply wasn't up to date? Though, that didn't explain how a child could have ended up as a military officer.
"Is there a picture?"
"It's been redacted, along with half his file. Who the hell are you dating, Mando?"
"We're not dating,"
Din insisted, his face flushed under his helmet. Inbox 1. Playback, reply, delete. 2. RC2349-3345. From AN5930. "I'm glad you got my message. I like your new armor. You're very, shiny. Is that a mudhorn on your pauldron? I once met a mudhorn on Dantooine. Nearly gored me. It was not my finest moment. Anyway, I saw what happened on Navarro. You'll have to tell me the whole story sometime. No one seems to know exactly what happened." "We, the Mantis and its crew, that is, have been running surveillance on Imperial activity in the Outer Rim. We don't know what's going on yet, but something's about to happen. I can feel it. If you can, you should lie low for a while." Inbox 1. Playback, reply, delete. 2. AN5930. From RC2349-3345.
"I appreciate your concern. I wish it were possible for me to lie low, but I've been tasked with a quest. There are people I need to find, things I need to take care of. I can handle dregs of the Empire, though. Yes, it's a mudhorn. This one I met on Arvala 7. A while back, some Jawas stripped my ship and I had to buy the parts back with an egg. It was, an ordeal. That's another story I'll have to tell you sometime. It sounds like you're the one that needs to be told to stay safe if you're keeping tabs on the Empire. I know for a fact they don't take kindly to interference."
Din met what he thought was his first Jedi on the dismal planet of Corvus. Ahsoka Tano was a strange being, but he couldn't help but see a little of the kid. Grogu, he knew the name now. He might use it, in her clever eyes and mysterious power. He had to admit that he was a little surprised she wasn't green or have giant ears. Being a Jedi must be more like being a Mandalorian than a species. This revelation was accompanied by a moment of recognition when he saw the Jedi's weapon. Twin blades of light, pure white, elegant, familiar. He asked her about them as the three of them sat around the lantern at her campsite. Din hoped he wasn't bothering her with his questions, but he felt it was his right to ask them, considering he would, eventually, leave his kid with these people. Do only Jedi have laser swords? Lightsabers. And not only Jedi do, the Sith have them. I've seen others with similar weapons, though it's rare. Ahsoka reached a slender orange finger out to Grogu beside her, who grabbed hold of it and brought it close to his large, dark brown eyes. The Force aids us, guides our blades. My lightsabers are a part of me, as much as my arms and legs are. Din thought of dual cyan blades, whirring and slicing in the icy half-light of the caverns on Baron, and the effortless fluidity of Cal's movements as he wielded them. He also thought of the way Ahsoka moved, as though weightless, the mental connection between her and Grogu that he couldn't imagine. The first time they'd met, Cal had seemed almost inhumanly skilled, and he'd continued to pull off impossible stunts every time their paths had crossed. The parallels were there, had been there the whole time. He just hadn't had the perspective to see them. Was it possible that he'd known a Jedi this whole carking time? He felt an undeniable ache in his chest. He thought he should be angry. He was, sort of. If the Mandalorians and the Jedi were natural enemies, he could understand why Cal might not have told him directly. But Cal was also the closest thing to a friend that Din had. He'd trusted him, nearly as much as he trusted his own kind. He'd traveled with him, fought alongside him, watched him laugh. But if Din was right, Cal was actually a member of Grogu's people. And if attachments were bad for Grogu, what did that mean for Cal? On Tython, the Razor Crest waited for the return of its captain. Only a moment after Din and Grogu left to visit the Seeing Stone, a transmission came through. Hey, I don't know what's going on, but we just intercepted a coded message from Moff Gideon's cruiser, and it was about you. They're tracking your ship. I don't know why. You need to get to somewhere safe immediately. Disable the tracking beacon if you can. I'll find you. Please be careful. Din never heard it. About an hour later, Din watched in horror as his home was destroyed right before his eyes, immediately after his child was taken. He had nothing left but his armor and the spear on his back. It wasn't much, but it was going to have to be enough. Grogu's call through the Force was similar to what Cal imagined being hit over the head with the armorer's sledgehammer would feel like. One minute, he was walking down the hall towards his quarters, minding his own business, and the next, he was somewhere, and someone else. Tython, rocky and green, was overrun with Imperial troops. In the distance, two men in armor and a woman were fending them off, but there were more on the way. He felt deep, visceral fear. Not for himself, not of the dark troopers descending on him, but for his Bweer down on the hill below. He didn't want to cause his Bweer pain again. He didn't want people who want his blood to hurt his Bweer. He wanted to go back to how things were, just the two of them on the ship, his Bweer singing to him in a language Grogu sort of knew. Saved, loved, so very loved. Cal, kid, wake up. Cal was on the floor. His head hurt. People were crouched around him. What? Oh, Force, he's broken.
He's fine, Grease. Just give him a minute.
Cal began to regain his mental faculties. It was hard work. Then he shot up to his feet. Big mistake, the ground was made of goo, and made his way haltingly down the hall.
Cal, what's going on?
Sears' voice cut through his brain fog. He didn't have time to answer questions. He had to get to Tython, and he had to find his Mandalorian. He had to...
Gotta go find Yoda, but small, he muttered deliriously.
Sear looked at him like he'd grown another head.
Hate to break it to you, but Master Yoda's been dead for a good 10 years.
No, Cal said, frustrated. Force, his head was killing him.
The other one.